This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 178, sponsored by InStock Trades and Shiguri Death Frenzy by Funimation. Hi, welcome to iFanboy.com's Pick of the Week podcast, episode 178. My name is Paul Montgomery, and I'm here with Sonia Harris.
Hello.
Jim. I'm not even going to try it.
How's it going?
And Mike Romo.
Hello, hello, hello.
At iFanboy.com, we like comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one and writes about it on the website, and then we talk about it here on the podcast, along with various other topics of interest.
You are probably expecting to hear Ron, Josh, and Connor right now, which would make sense since this is technically their show, but you are not going to get that this time, so pause and delete here. This is the All Writer Special, the iFanboy response to the Assistant Editor's Month at Marvel Comics and or an April Fool's something.
But before we get to the show, this is a reminder slash warning. It's a review show of this week's comics, so if you haven't read them, stop and don't listen, unless you like spoilers. Most people don't, so if you want to go read this week's books before you listen to us, go do that. This week, Josh has the pick, which was Flash Rebirth number one.
The long-awaited Flash Rebirth number one by Geoff Johns and Ethan Van Sciver. And I think what is this, the most anticipated book so far of the year? I think
certainly. It is apparently the most picked book or most pulled book ever in iFanboy.com history.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. 801 last time I heard.
Well, it was those 2-page spreads. Every comic was over the past 2 weeks. It would open up, and when the first time I saw it, I'm like, oh yeah, I can't wait for this book. I became like a monster truck guy while I was reading my comic. It was exciting. What did you guys think?
I don't know anything about The Flash, but I knew that we were in for a flash-a-lanch because, well, you know, the rogues began twittering and Ron began listing things that this book had better do, and it seemed like everywhere I turned, this was all I heard about. But as I think I mentioned to you guys earlier, I have never read a Flash anything before this. I bought it because I felt like I needed to be able to have a conversation tonight about it, and before that, I had never seen The Flash or touched The Flash in any capacity other than Tom Cater's excellent Tom versus The Flash podcast. And as I think I also mentioned, when all you've done is, if the only person who's ever told you a Flash story is Tom Cater's, a book like this, you read it and you go, well, they are really taking this seriously.
It's a bit of an evolution from the old stuff, yeah.
Perhaps we should pause and explain what it is we're talking about. first.
What's the rebirth of the Flash? It's the return of Barry Allen after many, many years, after Crisis on Infinite Earths. He's been not dead, but stuck in the Speed Force out of some valiant sacrifice or accident, according to him. And he doesn't know how long this is going to last, that he's going to be free from the Speed Force. Everybody in the DC Universe is really happy about it, except for Bart Allen, his grandson from the future. Lots of physics involved in this comic book, but everybody's excited about it except for him. And he's all doom and gloom about it, wondering when he's going to get sucked back into the Speed Force. So kind of a glass half empty kind of guy.
I never remembered him being this serious. I read some comments where people are like, his tone is different. I felt he was almost like Bruce Wayne. His attitude toward it. He sounded very sort of grim, even when, and one of my favorite moments of the book was when he gets to hang out with Hal Jordan, and they even make that funny joke about the bow ties, because when I read it as a kid, these guys were these best of friends, clean cut, fun loving dudes, and then he comes back, and there really is sort of this. It surprised me. It's much more. It's a heavier. There's more gravitas with his return. Less of a celebration. Mm.
He doesn't have time for your party.
He doesn't. He's late already for another one.
Well, the thing is, this is really the first time we've seen Barry Allen in in any extended capacity in modern comics, because the last time was Crisis on Infinite Earths, which it was still like crazy condensed comics back then. So. Yeah. This is the first time we're seeing the really dark and gritty kind of...
I guess they try and lift it a bit with his friendship with Hal. You know, there's that conversation they have and they're kind of joking back and forth. And I like that there's the dynamic between them explored. So I think he's trying to lift the mood a little bit. It doesn't come across as funny, but I think he's trying to be funny.
All that talk about the guilty made me feel like I was reading a kind of a Punisher comic. And that first page of captions just made me think I had wasted three of my dollars right off the bat. But luckily, I mean, don't get me wrong. I thought this was great.
I liked those first three pages.
Visually, it was interesting because you got that POV shot. That's cool. Captions were a little bit heavy.
After listening, and maybe this is just my all of my exposure to The Flash has been listening to an excellent podcast where a very funny fellow has himself a beer and recites a Flash comic and describes it and deconstructs it in a humorous way. So, like, when I start to read about the guilty and I thought, have I accidentally bought this? You know, but don't get me wrong, though. It turned out to be great. It turned out to be compelling. Like I said, I don't know anything about the character, but I did by the time I was done. You know, everybody always says that my Manchurian Candidate trigger word is jumping on point. but this is one of those.
Fantastic art, which, you know, I haven't seen a full book of his in a while. And some of the details so sharp. It's almost like an etching at some points, the lightning and the energy. It's almost, the opening sequence is almost three-dimensional. It's so clear that I thought was kind of cool.
I think that works really well because he's incredibly spot on with everything in the first few pages. But I think as he gets further in, his faces are a little bit pinched. He's really strong on details. He's really great with bodies. The boots and the arses are perfect. And the faces are just a bit pinched. So I think those first few pages work the best because they're so electric and exciting and you don't know what's going to happen. But as you go in, these people are so serious and then their faces are so pinched and waspy and it just becomes a bit dry.
Well, as I looked at I was particularly impressed by like the scenes of them wandering through the Flash Museum, and when I see things like that, I almost want to write to the writer or write to the artist and apologize, because I know that no matter how hard I look, I'm not going to get everything out of it that he put into it. There's a lot of detail there, so much so that you almost forget that the Flash Museum is a sort of an insane thing to have.
There's like a little element of Where's Waldo to it. There's so many different little like Easter eggs and everything.
Did you play Spot the In Joke? Like I think Dexter Miles is a person who I'm supposed to know, and he was in there, and you know, it's like, oh, let me ask you this. Was Barry Allen always, did his dad always kill his mom?
That's the continuity controversy.
Ah.
people are talking about. And apparently that has to do – I haven't read Mark Waid's run. That apparently has something to do with that. So I can't really say whether or not I'd be pissed off if I'd read Mark Waid's and Geoff Johns' previous Flash run and then read this, which apparently throws that all out of balance. But having not read those things, this doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things get lost in the shuffle of continuity and updating things anyway. So you're going to lose, some babies in the bathwater, but it's just how it is. So
it was nice not to have to care about any of that.
I mean, was Barry Allen a bit more fun back in the day? I just thought he was more fun back in the day. I'm finding this a bit heavy. Just a bit. Now that he's a dad, but then, most people who I know who have kids get it a bit serious, so maybe it's just...
He did just come back from being dead.
Oh, so yeah. That'll bring you down.
It's, it's like what Josh wrote in his review. There was echoes of Steve Rogers of being a man out of time, so that must have been disturbing.
Well, I found the character very relatable because of that, he's got this sense of having missed out on so much and being so beholden and having so many things that he still needs to do with the time he has left. And I mean, I'm not dying or anything. Don't panic. But I definitely do feel like I'm playing catch up a lot of the time. And so reading his struggle was, like I said, very relatable to me. And the story made me think that the Flash wasn't who I thought he was. And it surprised me in ways good and bad. And I'm not just talking about the horrific muscle baby.
This is pretty tame for the muscle baby.
He has super strength. It was well illustrated super strength, because otherwise you wouldn't know which kid had super strength. I thought it was good because it showed which kid had the super strength.
That kid looks really caricaturish in other comics. Like, he looks like he should be driving in a dune buggy. Like, he just does not look right at all. It just
maybe a little like garbage pail kid or something. Yeah. Well.
So, Chomsky, do you think you're going to stick with it? After this issue,
I'll read it through.
Okay.
Whether or not it makes a Flash non-rebirth lover out of me, like if I start reading the main book, I don't know. I'm also very confused about why we're on like four Flashes.
It's confusing.
What was the compelling reason in a world with Bart Allen and Wally West and Wiki Wally and whoever the hell else is
Wiki Wally? Come on.
I don't know. Far be it from a Marvel zombie to make fun of alliterative names, but yeah, I don't know why Barry Allen has to come back, and maybe that's what this book will tell me. Otherwise, it seems like just another meaningful death that's being undone for no compelling reason. But the book is very entertaining. It sounds like I'm trashing it, but I liked it quite a lot.
Speaking of entertaining death, I think we should move on to Max Comics Destroyer. Because I've never been more entertained by Carnage in I don't know how long. This is Robert Kirkman, and who drew this?
Corey Walker, right?
Corey Walker.
Yeah. Okay. This is if Ed Asner or John McCain.
Enough. I won't let you say this again. It's not John McCain. John McCain is not acceptable.
Ed Asner or Wilford Brimley were a superhero. Okay. And basically he has a sort of a medical death sentence. He has a bum ticker. He went to a doctor underwater and he had weird cyborg parts to his head. And he said, "Listen, you gotta slow down, man. You gotta calm down, you gotta relax. You can't be like pushing rifles through people's sternums for much longer or you're just gonna keel over and die." So this is the bucket list for superheroes. Very violent, very worthy for the Max explicit content label on the cover.
It earns its name. Although, isn't it interesting that, basically there's nothing in this book, this Max, Marvel Max book, that isn't in Invincible any other issue?
And I didn't read Invincible, okay? So I know I don't know shit here, but I think this is a really stellar comic. It would be my pick of the week because I do love this whole... I don't think it's like bucket list. I don't think it's like anything else that's ever been done because you've got this dynamic, vibrant, violent, active man who's also a bloody old granddad. And he's got family and he's got shit going on with them and he's got wife and commitments. And he's also incredibly powerful. I don't think there's been anything like this.
I didn't mean to simplify that. I'm just trying to pitch it really sort of quickly.
and when I say there's
dismissive, you know, by saying, "Oh, it's like this and this, it's unique and beautiful."
That's fair. But it is great. I think it's my pick of the week as well. I really enjoyed it. So
it was certainly a contender for me in a week that was not very strong. When I said that it was like exactly like what you'd find in Invincible, I meant in terms of the gore, like that thing where in the very first panel the Destroyer is punching a guy so hard that his jaw has flown off of his head, that might as well have a little like registered trademark symbol next to it, like copyright 2008 Corey Walker and Robert Kirkman, because I swear to God, Invincible has relieved a few people of its jaws, of their jaws in its day.
I didn't see the jaw. I'm just seeing eyeballs and bits of
the
head.
There's some jaw there.
Yeah.
There's some mandibular carnage for sure. Right there.
Yeah.
Look, if I punched my fist through your head, there'd be parts of your head flying through your head. I'm just saying, it's realistic in this beautiful, cartoony, kind of elegant way.
It very realistically presents the way a human fist would penetrate the skull. Yes.
And don't you want to see that? Come on. But it's elegant and cartoony in this
cute
way.
We're not saying it's bad. We like it. We're just saying that we're just trying to explain to anyone who hasn't looked at it, this is what it is, without reading the entire book. I mean, we could start at page one and say, okay, everybody, page one, and then we'll have Mike make a little, like, golden books noise for when they should turn the page. But it's,
If you've ever wanted to see your grandfather rip your uncle's heart out.
Yes, through his mouth. Through his mouth. Yeah, that whole nearly got it bit. Oh, my God.
Not to start anything, but this really kind of made me think of a sort of an inverse kick-ass, where he's like a young kid trying to do this, and he's old, and it's like this. It's still the same kind of violence, but it takes it from this great angle. And two things that I liked about those books are the relationships with the family.
It's an inverse of a kick-ass because he's pulling out, not kicking in. He's pulling out.
But I love the scenes between him and his wife. I thought they were so tender and such a great counterpoint to the opening and the closing.
And she explains that she doesn't have a bionic arm. She's like, it's just a hand to do things. You know, they do this great little one page, half a page even, where they describe how her arm works, and she's not bionic, it's just an arm. So it's clearly set in a universe where things are a little bit technologically advanced.
Yes. Sometimes the doctor's underwater and has...
I noticed that on my second read. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he has a neat aquarium in his room. And then I looked at the establishing shot and it's underwater.
I like the idea that he finds out he's only got so much more time to live, and he decides to spend it like leaving his legacy to his grandchildren is killing all of the people who could possibly harm anyone goes. Sonia, I think you were talking about how, you know, another viable choice might be to not kill people and race your heart and spend more time with those people, but he's kind of decided that it's over for him, and now he's just got to leave them something to remember him by, which is to say their disemboweled uncle.
He's created something of a bucket list.
Okay, I'll give it to you. I didn't see that movie. I just object to my childhood heroes being turned into cute old men. You know, when you watch Easy Rider, do you really think, oh, I want to see that guy as a little old man being cute?
Mm-mm. It also reminded me of that book Red, which had an older guy who was sort of going through his ex work and offing people.
See, yeah, old guys can do amazing shit. That's why this book is incredible. Yeah.
Well, speaking of old guys who do amazing shit, long live Captain America. It's his 70th anniversary issue. And I think as good as the main story written by James Robinson and Marcos Martin, whose covers I've been exploiting on my column, I think I've never been more entertained by a backup reprint story ever.
Man.
This Captain America, Death Loads the Bases by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. Featuring the only baseball game that I've ever heard of that continues to play even after a player dies during the game. Two players. Right.
This is the kind of thing that normally I would get to that page in the book and go, God damn it, why don't I look at these things before I pay for them? But this one I read, and it was the, you know, perhaps the most delightful thing I'd seen all week. Now, I wouldn't want every Captain America comic I read on a monthly basis to be written this way, but as an occasional visit, this was a delight. Especially, I mean, where do you even start? Where Cap and Bucky try to lure out the killer by joining the baseball team while playing in their costumes with baseball uniforms on over them.
How hot are they? I mean, that's impractical right there.
The way that, like, someone gets murdered in front of 50,000 people and they all just keep speaking in baseball puns.
Like, also, the bad guy has fangs. So even without his mask on, they'd be like, oh, you're the guy with the fangs.
But
yeah,
we
spotted you because you had giant fangs.
He's also his name is the Black Toad.
Despite his fangs and his cape and his wolf ears, his name is the Toad. So I presume that must be his given name, because I can't think of any reason.
I usually always skip these things, but when I saw the opening page with two players skidding into gravestones and the umpire as death, I'm like, maybe I'll give it a try. And
maybe I'll give it a try. Yeah, maybe.
Well, it was an earlier reprint. A lot of times it's usually from the 60s, and I'm not that interested. But here the art style was so different. The lines between the panels with the lightning bolts and the fuzziness for the ideas, I thought it was so dynamic. Actually, yeah. I thought it was really advanced.
And it has all of those great golden age storytelling devices where, like, just on the precipice of World War, Cap and Bucky just leave the barracks in the middle of the night to go catch a ball game. And then, as often happens, the pitcher's felled by a blowgun. And, you know, then they make jokes about it, like you do when somebody dies in front of you.
Okay, yeah. This is all well and good, but we should talk about the story we were sold.
The current day story, the
very exciting and beautiful, elegant, grown-up story that we were sold as the book.
Yes.
Well, which I thought was great. I mean, I know it's probably contrived, but it was nice. First of all, it was nice to see Marcos Martín's work again. This guy, for me, can do no wrong. I thought the opening where you pan down, you tilt down, and you see the inside of the plane, and then right at the final thing, there's Bucky right to his left. I mean, it really set it up really nicely. His art was great. I know, Sonya, if you felt that Steve was a little skinny.
Oh my god.
He looks like Christian Bale in The Machinist.
No. He looks thinner. He looks even thinner than Christian Bale in The Machinist. I've never seen a human being thinner than this. It's silly. His neck is like 2 feet long. He's like E.T. Like, come on. Like, I know you're exaggerating.
Marcos Martín is not trying to be Alex Ross. he's trying to communicate. He's not trying to be literal.
Okay, fair enough. It just doesn't, that one panel, that first, you open it, he's there all emaciated and he's too thin. It's just, make his neck a little bit shorter and it might be realistic. That's all I'm saying.
Well, maybe skinny Steve just is not photogenic.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, that the camera takes 10 pounds off.
That's right. You don't know. I don't know how they worked back in the 40s. I agree about the art. I'm a little grinchier when it comes to the story, but when the two-page splash of skinny Steve kind of moping his way through Brooklyn or wherever he is like the textbook example of why everyone should know Marcos Martín's name.
I think the coloring is very beautiful on that page too. You know, the quality of the colors, it's these really lovely earth tones, and him moving through the city, it's very of its time.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
It's a nice setup for Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale's piece. It's almost like sort of showing, hey, look at what we can do, because, you know, that's not even out yet, right? They had issue zero.
And it never will be. Yeah, they put out zero, and they announced that, I think, in 1973, they announced that was coming out.
Yeah.
No, it's been like a year.
Oh, is that all? Well,
come on, I'm a reader of Planetary. I'm used to waiting.
Right. You have the patience of a saint, and we all...
Yeah. I'm still watching Dollhouse. Come on.
Another topic for about 10 minutes from now. But, yeah, I thought the story was a little Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And, like, we've discussed, like, one of the many, many excellent articles on iFanboy.com this week, and I can't remember if it was Josh or if it was you, Paul, but somebody was talking about how it's not the costumes, it's not the powers, it's not the crisis, it's the character that is the kind of the fulcrum of the story. And this takes everything that makes Captain America Captain America and strips it down to its very essence. You know, it takes away the shield, it takes away the bulk, it takes away the matinee idol good looks that Sonya appreciates so, and reduces him to...
I don't have a Captain America crush, I'm afraid to tell you.
Oh, no.
It's not someone I fantasize. He's not a bad boy. I don't go for him.
Oh,
sorry.
I see.
Well, next up, let's just talk about the issue that kind of inspired this whole writer's takeover of the I Find Boy Pick of the Week podcast in the first place. It's the Marvel Super, Assistant Size Spectacular? I'm not even sure how to read that title. But it's a special limited series, one of two. Chris Eliopoulos did the framing device. And then I was really surprised. I had no idea what to expect. Last time I saw one of these things, I didn't even, it was an assistant editor. It was Alpha Flight number 6 or something, Snowblind, and at one point all the panels just became white, and I thought it was like, wow, it's really snowy where the story is taking place. But no, the joke was that they actually didn't print any of the art. But I was like, wow, right. that is so edgy. So snowy, it's totally white. But I was really pleasantly surprised with this.
As was I, because this was always my recollection of Assistant Editor's Month was always that it was very gimmicky. And just in case anybody who is listening to my words does not know what we're talking about, Marvel used to be in the semi-regular habit of declaring an Assistant Editor's Month, where it would sort of throw the control of the books over to the assistants. And the whole gimmick was that the stories would then just be sort of off the wall and wacky. And like Marvel Team Up featured Franklin Richards and Aunt May versus Galactus, and you know that was the kind of thing that I kind of expected here, and I opened it up with eyes pre-rolled, but what I found instead was a lot of really serious, lovely stuff. There's a story in there about D-Man going to war in Iraq and trying to apply the dynamics of superheroism to the battlefield with sort of lackluster results, and there's a Jason Aaron story that takes place on an Indian reservation.
Yes, yeah, so a real departure for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Indian reservation, Native justice.
Yeah.
But gorgeously done. Holy crap.
Given that I was expecting like Howard the Duck and Power Pack versus Stiltman or something, finding the Jason Aaron story in the middle kind of made me feel like I owed everyone an apology.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm not the only one that remembers Power Pack.
I like Power Pack. I read that as a kid. Even liked the – I know some people diss on the mini Marvels, but I got to say, I laughed out loud. I just thought this was hilarious. I think
that was my favorite part.
Yeah.
They even diss it in the book. They complain about it that there's going to be a mini Marvel comic coming up, and I loved it. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, I ate some crow on that one because I was scoffing mini Marvels just along with everybody else in the book, including that friend of yours who's apparently in it. Paul.
That's right. Yeah, I actually know one of the assistant editors in this book. He's actually a character in the comic, Tom Brennan, who's the guy who fades into the background because he's so pale. I actually went to school with him, so that was really cool and surreal for me to read this.
Good stuff. Let's see what's next. Oh, this is another highly anticipated book. I feel kind of bad for the guys. We get to discuss not only The Flash, but Mark Waid and Peter Cross doing Irredeemable by Boom Studios. And
fantastic.
What did you guys think? People really liked it.
Pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
Amazing. I'm so glad you told us to buy this, Jim, right? It was Jim that was like, oh, you gotta get this.
I am proud of sort of agitating for this one.
Yeah, you rock. It was good. It was like definitely pick of the week material for me.
It was probably mine as well. I don't remember how I heard about it, but I loved the idea of Mark Waid taking this approach to superheroes and kind of – it's a little meta it's about an all-powerful hero in the Superman mold who sort of loses his mind, and the book begins with him kind of systematically massacring all of his former teammates, and they're kind of desperately trying to figure out how to –
Can I interject there, because I think you're being a bit harsh. I don't think lose your mind is fair. I think maybe just got frustrated with people being dicks. Really, and just lost it, you know, just kind of lost the line between what was a reasonable level of response to people being dicks, because people are dicks, and if you've got superhero, you're going to notice that they're assholes, and at some point maybe get frustrated with it, and if you're a sane person, you're just going to say, oh, well, people suck. If you kind of maybe lose control of your impulses, you might decide to kill them all. I'm just saying.
If you had envisioned, you'd do this too, probably by accident sometime.
I am sure I would.
When you lose control, though, when you lose control, you could argue that you are kind of losing your mind. But I will say that it was the most crazy, most manic opening, and then so chilling when he says, "Do you know who I am, Sarah? I'm a superhero." And you really get the weight of this, like, whoa, what would happen if the most powerful hero just didn't care? And this is like, I'm angry, and you guys can't do anything about it. You guys were discussing earlier the whole baseball scene, and where
I thought the whole book sort of hinged on that, and I think that's what it's going to prove to be about. He saves the lives of an entire baseball stadium full of people, and amidst, and again, this is something I relate to all too well. He hears an entire stadium full of people singing his praises and thanking God that he was there and talking about how great he is. And then just one little guy, like 20, 30 rows up, going, he's not so great. And like he gets this little twinge and, you know, fast forward to a couple of years later, he's completely lost his faith in humanity and is kind of...
Okay, and this is the part where if the artist, or even, and I think, because I think it could just be the inker, if, no offense to you guys, but like, who are doing this and making this great comic, but like, there were just a bit more fluidity there and a bit more expressiveness, that scene where he hears that guy mouthing off about him, if he just... Just if his face had just shown a bit more displeasure, it might have been a bit more emotive at that point.
What do you guys think about the two-page essay in the back by Grant Morrison? I thought that was
great. I love that, yeah. Because I think, for me, it's always been a huge question, that whole like categorization problem. I don't like people telling me who I am and what I'm like. And so I can really see how, as a creative person working in this industry, being told what you do well could really feel like it was trapping you and limiting you. And I love that Grant gives it up to Wade and says, I was complaining about it, but he did something. He broke he broke the mold there. And I appreciate Grant for being honest about that.
That having been said, I was not aware until Grant Morrison told me in this essay that Mark Waid had been pigeonholed, because maybe it's because I didn't read a lot of his DC work. And I mean, Grant Morrison describes Mark Waid as the guy you go to when you want to reinsert the fun into your stodgy old Silver Age dad comics or whatever, which is something I had never heard until that moment. Because when I read this book, all I thought of was a previous Mark Waid series called Empire, which he did with Barry Kitson, which you should definitely pick up if you haven't already. The premise of which being, it's about that supervillain who's always threatening to take over the world, actually taking it over, and then having to hold on to it and, you know, run it and deal with famine in Africa and actually the ins and outs of. And it's a great series. It's sort of joyless and pitiless and harsh in a way that this Irredeemable is going to kick up to notches unheard. And
maybe his team, I don't know. His team seemed pretty fucking resourceful. I was curious as to where this would go. I want to see where this will go. It's setting the scene. I want to see where it'll go.
Mm. I couldn't agree more. Dead baby warning.
Fiery baby warning.
There will be a
tiny skeleton, not good. Yeah.
That's what I assumed we'd be talking about, because Jimsky sent us the email. Oh, there's a dead baby and sounds like great.
Dead baby hatred.
Nobody likes that. No.
No, in fact, the crowd howls for blood as two damaged warriors sacrifice flesh and bone in a perverse test of wills. Yes, Funimation presents Shigaruri Death Frenzy.
Yes.
This is the story of Fujiku Gennosuke and Irako Saigen, two legendary samurai who share a long and violent past. Bitter rivals from the moment they locked eyes, these warriors inflicted wounds on each other that would have destroyed lesser men. As the final chapter of their saga unfolds, they must summon the strength for one last battle. A battle only one shall survive. Available now on Blu-ray and DVD. We're talking Shigaruri Death Frenzy.
I want everybody else to try saying it too.
No.
Don't you say Shigaruri Death Frenzy?
No, I'm not going
to.
You have to go. You have to visit Funimation.com Shigaruri, Shigurui, for more details. It sounds fun. It sounds. The beauty is in the kill, my friends.
I want to see it.
Not only do I want to see it, I want to hire Mike to be in the live action version of it.
I want to see it with you guys.
I'll be right over.
You should have heard me practicing that in the shower this morning. Anyway, On to Superman Batman number 57. Anybody want to talk about what this title means to them?
This title means to me finding out that Jeff Loeb was over the top about 5 or 6 years ago. I haven't read it in quite some time.
Very interesting.
Oh my God, I killed the
stunned silence.
He didn't write this one. He didn't write this one. He hasn't read it for a while.
No, I haven't read it since number 9 or something. Don't listen to me.
The best thing about this, I've been reading it off and on, and then I just kind of picked it up because the art was really good. And basically, the past two arcs have been really, really nice and really, really solid, just fun comic book stories about two great characters and kind of what's been lost, I think, with the Final Crisis and, you know, the death of Batman, the battle for his cowl and all that stuff. You forget the fun and this relationship that these two guys have and the legacy that these two characters have. And if you just want to read great stories about these characters working together, this has been a really consistently good series for the most part. I think it's great to give to people who like the characters but maybe are not just regular comic book readers but want that kind of energy and excitement. So I've been pleasantly surprised.
Are these stories in continuity?
They are definitely not.
Okay.
I agree with that. It's like Batman and Superman both have like new steady girlfriends, so they're like hanging out with them all the time and they never get to hang out with each other anymore. And like those girlfriends are continuity. And this is out of continuity where it's safe and fun and everything. So I agree with Mike that you just find an arc. If it looks interesting, pick it up. It's, you don't have to read from, you know, number one. You can just pick it up and give it a shot. This is a cool Abnett and Lanning story about Superman getting stuck in the microverse. Time happens really quickly there, so Batman has to save him before he dies of old age. And it's sort of a cool cosmic story on a very, very small level.
So what you're saying, your analogy, Paul, is that this comic is the bromance version of a Vegas weekend road trip.
Exactly.
I see. Let me take a note. Let me write that down.
This is the Judd Apatow series for Batman and Superman.
I would love to actually see Judd Apatow tackle Sea Guy, the Slaves of Mickey Eye, because he might be able to make it more entertaining than I found it, to be honest. I was so dreadfully confused by this. I think I had fun, but I didn't know
exactly
if I was being made fun of.
Why is confusion a bad thing? It was very strange, and it piqued my interest for issue 2. It made very little sense, but it started a lot of questions, and it had so many bizarre, iconic sort of characters that you really, really need a second issue to see what the fuck he's on about. And I hate to put, you know, I really hate to put Grant Morrison in a box, but it was confusing. What a surprise!
He hates that too. He hates that too, even as he's doing the thing that got him there.
Well, that's funny. I read this after Irredeemable, and I'm like, oh wow, Grant's being put in a box. I mean, even though he's basically in the comic, you see there's this character that's bald, wears a nice suit, wears crazy glasses, you know, black shirt, white tie, kind of reminded me of Grant Morrison a little bit. In the middle, when he's visiting the museum.
Yeah.
I was like, that's like a little mini Grant. This guy's crazy.
Oh,
I don't
come
know.
On. That guy with a big head? That's not Grant. He's short. Weird.
I think maybe representational. I'm just kidding. But no. I mean, it does have an evil parrot. It is $3.99. I was like,
evil parrot? Sign me.
Yeah, it has a crazy... No, what's weird is it has this sort of flesh monster thing that eats people's brains, too.
Oh,
and
really?
That part's fun.
On that
it's crazy. The half an animal on a stick who needs to give your brains a lick.
Have any of you guys...
And there's lots of slurp noises.
Is that in the book, or did you just write a jingle for that monster?
No, I swear to God, I just read that straight from the book. Also, there's the she-beard who makes her landlord fight her for her rent or her virginity. Seriously, this has some weird shit in it. You may want to have a look.
I am growing tired just hearing you describe this to me.
The poet, and we didn't know it. All right, so who's read Buffy?
Oh, God.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to leave this to you guys.
Oh,
so
come
is
on.
I didn't make fun
of the Superman Batman fetish. Come on.
Oh.
Is this the year that Joss Whedon just puts his name on things that he has no participation in whatsoever? Is that
Are
what
you thinking that about Dollhouse as well?
Oh, yeah. I should.
Yeah, I think that. I think maybe he has nothing to do with that. But anyway,
to be honest, I ended up liking this book a lot more than I thought I was going to. But God Almighty, was I mad when I realized that I had brought it all the way home. And see, all I ask is that if you're gonna sell me a book called Buffy Season 8. Executive produced by Joss Whedon, that one of the people who was responsible for the previous 7 seasons of Buffy is responsible for the comic. So that I don't feel like I'm reading illustrated fanfic. But instead,
that's how a show works anyway. He's the executive producer. He's the creator. When they do the show, it's written by other people, and a lot of those other people, aside from Brian K. Vaughan, who is like a doppel Whedoner, they worked on the show, so it's this is maybe the one comic writer who hasn't done the show before.
Well, yes,
this one shot.
It is accepted fact that I'm a humorless churl.
It's okay.
Yes, and a great cover.
No, it did not have a great cover.
Some sort of mutilated woman on it.
Her right boob is much, much, much bigger and the wrong shape.
Human spines can't do that.
Well, that too, but I was focused more on her breast, and it's the wrong shape and much too big, and I don't understand that.
I was just being polite.
Just from perspective, her breast should be, that one should be smaller.
Speaking of misshapen breasts, I don't know where we're going to go with that. I'm going to just toss it in for Invincible Iron Man number 24. Let's move this along, people.
There's a girl Iron Man. I like that Iron
That's
Woman.
That's true.
Is it Invincible Iron Man number 24?
Number 12, sorry. I doubled it. That's my special power. We have Matt Fraction and Salvador La Roca. I've been reading this pretty regularly, and I got to say, we never really talk. I never hear much about it on the show, and I think it's been pretty consistent. Do you guys read this regularly?
Yes.
I have come to read it regularly, and I've come to appreciate it a lot more in a way that it's rehabilitated Tony Stark for me. There was no greater, more hated villain in the Marvel Universe than Iron Man for me after Civil War.
Should we set the scene a bit and say what's happened?
Basically, if you hated Civil War and Tony's part in it, you'll love this, because now Hammer is in charge and the rain is dark and he's got to make amends. So he has erased S.H.I.E.L.D.'s superhero secret identity database and saved a copy of it in his brain, and now he is in the process of erasing his brain. And while he does that, the ladies he works with, Pepper Potts and Maria Hill, are in the process of saving the world on his behalf a little bit.
Speaking of which, I was unexpectedly sort of emotionally affected when Maria Hill got it. She may or may not be dead, but I never really liked Maria Hill, but I guess I did, because I was really like, oh my God, is she dead now?
Oh, that was horrible. That was like a job of the Hutt style murder. That was terrible. Yeah, that's something. You remember Stray Toasters? Did anybody read Stray Toasters?
Bill Sienkiewicz. I think I was about...
Scenes of him like sucking the brains out of little kids, like this is like that, like where all his disgusting creepy zombies are delivering her up to be sucked.
That's the controller. I think that's an old guy, an old villain. Probably wasn't that creepy the last time anybody saw him.
It's great. It's like, I wonder what he does, this controller guy.
He controls people.
can't wait to find out. And if you don't like to see creepy mind control, you can watch Iron Man fight Namor with poop.
Yes, indeed.
I love that.
Nothing gets to Namor like a bunch of poop.
I don't think, just as someone who has never been in a fight or superhero brawl himself, I guarantee you that poop would be the most effective weapon against me.
All right, speaking of poop, let's go to the peanut gallery and see what you, the...
Did you just compare the user reviews to poop?
Yes, no, I did. That was pretty amazing.
Mike just did the boob thing with the iron. All right.
Yeah, but
so all right.
Well done.
Caustic
well done.
Coust read Dark Reign, Fantastic Four number 2. He gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. User pick of the week percentage 0.02%. I have to confess a bias in my evaluation of various Fantastic Four entries. My principal litmus test is how well a writer deploys and characterizes my favorite superhero of all time, Reed Richards. Lee and Kirby's Mr. Fantastic was a willful and arrogant perfectionist, constantly railing and chafing against scientific and personal limitations, even as he reflexively self-sacrificed and endangered his family for the good of mankind. Jonathan Hickman nails it. I agree. I think Jonathan Hickman is the perfect writer for Fantastic Four in general, so I'm excited for him to be doing the main series. And this mini is a lot of fun, too.
It is.
Thumbs up.
Yes. Tis the clobbering hour.
M'lady, tis the clobbering hour. So, well done. I'm not really sure where this is going, but I'm going to continue to read it. I think it's pretty exciting, and I do like the art, but so far it's been pretty enjoyable.
Jumping Jupiter, who's always an elegant commenter, he gave The Mighty number 3. He gave the story 5 out of 5 and the art 4 out of 5. Nobody picked this as their pick of the week, which is strange because if he liked it, why didn't he pick it? But anyway, he writes, "The art services the story very well. Big, rich pools of ink establish mood in a bar and at a chemical fire. Blinding yellows express the oppressive nature of a press conference, jade greens and skewed perspectives for an alien sanctuary, and the consistently drawn characters look and emote like people you and I know. It adds to the quiet drama and sucks you right in," which sort of makes me curious as to what the fuck The Mighty is. So I need to take a look at that.
None of us are reading this, right?
I am not.
It's Tomasi, I believe. I'm going to wait for the trade, but
well, I like him very much, so I'll take a look.
Yeah, the one thing I wanted to say about this review, it's great to see people trying to touch on the art, because a lot of the user reviews focus mainly on the story and get into synopsis of you know what happened in the book and everything. It's nice to see people tackling the other 50% of what makes up comics. So I'd like to see more of that from the user reviews. It's always
Paul
cool.
has spoken. It's also nice to have the user reviews highlighted and bring up these books that might be less familiar to us. If, for example, you spend a good portion of every day on iFanboy.com, perhaps even writing one of the columns on a weekly basis, and still half the books that are out, you've never goddamn heard of them before. That might be frustrating to you. And so we need the users to...
Let us know what to read and give us great reviews like this to let us know why.
Right.
Good stuff.
Now, Paul, you're waiting for the trade on The Mighty.
Yes.
Correct.
Where should I get it? I don't know.
Well, what my recommendation to you, Paul, is that you buy it at instocktrades.com. Because you see, Paul, in these tough economic times, it is so important to try and save as much money as you can. And you can save up to 37% off at InStock Trades. And that, I mean, that's not even getting into the free shipping on orders over $50. Also important in these tough economic times. They have over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock, which is more than the Borders down the street from me, I'll tell you that much. And they're all available for order. New releases listed every Wednesday. Orders, most of the time, ship within 48 hours. And, you know, just go to www.instocktrades.com and spend the rest of your rent money on these books.
Sounds like a good plan.
Sounds like good. I'm going to do that.
Yes, that's a great, investment-wise, that's your best option.
So if you're out there and you have questions for the iFanboy crew, you can send an email over to contact@ifanboy.com, and we have a few letters today. We have one from Steven Meisner, and he writes us, he says, "I just had a quick comment regarding backup stories, like the Power Girl story in this week's Flash Rebirth book, and was wondering what your opinions are." So... like, I generally don't mind backup stories as long as they have something to do with the book or the overall story in the universe. By the way, I mainly read DC. I enjoyed the little 3-page bios and the history of the DCU in 52 and Countdown. Like, the backups are the only reason I'm even holding on to the Countdown series. And I love the backup stories in Fear Agent. But with Flash Rebirth, I thought the Power Girl backup ruined my book. I loved Flash Rebirth number 1, but now every time I look at it, I'm going to have to see that Power Girl story at the end of it, and I'm no way interested in PG. So what do you guys think? Isn't it enough to lay out 1 or 2-page ads for other books? Or do you think slapping an unrelated story at the end of a title is going to grab readers? In my case, it probably lowered my chances of picking up the PG. I think they would have been better suited putting out the first issue for a buck. Whoa.
Well, first of all, it's not a backup story. It's a teaser. There's a big difference. He didn't have to read it. I never read those things, although I did like those pictures of Power Girl. She had nice boobs. But I'm just saying, it wasn't a backup story. It's a misnomer. That is a teaser. Don't read it.
Marvel is addicted to doing this sort of thing, by the way, and I would contend that if reading it made him less likely to pick up Power Girl, meaning that otherwise he would have picked up Power Girl not knowing that it was something he didn't like, then what just happened to him is a good thing.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, and the thing is, it's you may not be interested in the character, you may not, but you don't have to read it. It's giving some
people
a chance to
do some marketing. They're like ads. I don't read the ads either.
Ads.
You know, just don't read it.
It's exactly
right. If I paid an extra dollar for the privilege, yes, it's true. I would have some sort of brain aneurysm.
Yeah.
Because I hate that stuff. But I don't think that's an issue here. And if it really bothers you that much that every time you look at it, you're going to have to see it, I can attest. I've learned this a lot in the last year. There is nothing more satisfying than ripping apart a comic book a page at a time and wadding it up and throwing it in the trash.
What? You've done that?
After years of boarding and bagging everything, I read a couple of times this year, I've read something that made me so mad that I just was compelled to destroy it.
Okay, now, here's my problem with that, all right? If you've ever been to the doctor's office and noticed that all they have is three-year-old sailing magazines, wouldn't it be nice to donate your old comics? There are lots of places that would appreciate your shitty comics.
If there are people trying to feel better, they don't want to read the Grant Morrison comic that is actually a prose story that I accidentally paid for, that I never get that money back again. But
in closing, we don't seem to mind them. If they really bother you, don't read them. We have another email. Corinna writes, I was hoping that you could help me out. It has been about a year now since I started reading Comics Weekly, and I found myself completely fascinated with the X-Men universe. When I was younger, my parents used to buy me the old Chris Claremont Uncanny Trades, and I would readily eat them up. Sounds disgusting. I was also a fan of the X-Men Evolution series. Since starting to read comics more, I've been trying to get into these X-Men books. I started reading Uncanny X-Men at 500 and Cable when it started. However, I dropped Cable after the first run was over. Tell me, please, what trades are essential for having a thorough knowledge of the X-Men universe? Sonia, I'm handing this to you.
And I am so happy I'm here and Ron isn't, because I'm going to tell you right now what will save you a lot of time. You read those old Chris Claremont ones. I don't know if you read it, but if you didn't, pick up the Dark Phoenix saga and maybe read a little bit around that, you know, maybe for fun. And then just skip everything in the 90s and then read Astonishing X-Men and Grant Morrison's New X-Men and you're sorted.
Very nice.
Yes. I'm also compelled to mention that the Marvel has released the entire run of Uncanny X-Men on DVD-ROM if you can stand to look at the screen and read them in PDF form.
Just don't get the Ultimate X-Men one by accident.
Right. And exactly. Don't try to do it all in one sitting. You'll be very sorry.
So again, if you guys have any emails that you want the guys to answer, email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And now we got some voicemail. And if you want to leave voicemail, call us. We don't have voicemail, but if you wanted to, you would call 1-888-FANBOYS-326-2697. I love that I'm telling you the guys this, even though we have no voicemail to tell you about.
I did.
You have the capacity to get voicemail.
We have the technology. So
I could pretend to be a caller.
You should call for us, and then the other iFanboys, the real iFanboys, will have to deal with it. But you should call and leave messages for us. I like
what
that.
What Marvel comics should I read? I've never read them before. What should I read?
This is Daryl stalking the streets of New York. The writers are terrible podcasters.
Hello, Daryl.
Okay, let's put this out of its misery. Check out ifanboy.com for the pick and more in-depth comic book discussion and wonderful articles and news and discussion topics from this panel of geniuses before you, as well as, I want to say, John, Rob, and Hunter.
Yeah, Hunter.
And
Rob, my mom always calls him Rob. She always says, that Rob wrote a nice article.
If my mother started reading this website, I'd have to go somewhere else.
I wish she wouldn't.
Look at ifanboy.com/about to see the social networking links. While you're there, go to ifanboy.com/store and ifanboy.com/Amazon and send a little gratuity the boys' way, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, and Robin Hood time. Support iFanboy by becoming an iFanboy member for $4 a month or $42 a year. You get the iFanboy prize pack, stickers and buttons and a random comic from the guy's collection. Or you go up to the platinum level and $10 a month or $100 a year, and that gets you a prize pack and the special edition iFanboy membership t-shirt in black.
Ooh, black. I've got one. I sleep in it. Okay. In addition to the audio show, there is also a video show, which comes out every Wednesday. You can download it from revision3.com/ifanboy or from this site or from TiVo, which comes out on Thursday, which is how I watch it. And it's nice and big. And this last week, they had superhero costumes, which is great for the fashion mavens amongst us. And next week, it's Geoff Johns.
And you can also go and get yourself some Fanboy intern t-shirts. They're available now at the Revision 3 store. You go to revision3.com/store, and you get yourself for $15.99 a very nice shirt that says the word intern on it. It's in bright blue. You will be noticed in this shirt. We pretty much guarantee it, though I won't be sending you any money back. Anyway, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or, as we mentioned earlier, leave that short, under 30-second voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS, 326-2697, with any questions, concerns, comments, or complaints about your friendly writing staff.
Not about us. Usually doing this. Sorry.
No. If you enjoy this show normally, write us a review.
Not now, clearly.
No, I beg you. Do not review this episode. This is indicative of nothing but a little bit of poor judgment on the boys' part. Better yet, tell your friends about us. I've told mine. They still don't listen, but yours probably respect you. So take advantage of that. Tell your mom. Sonia did, and look how that's paid.
No, I didn't tell her. Actually, she just
spray painted on walls.
Yeah,
paint Ron sideburns on walls in public parks.
Absolutely, flyer your campus, and everywhere you go, you'll hear the kids in the quad going, "What's Iffin boy?"
You get stickers in your membership package, so you should put them on like yield signs and stuff.
Oh yes, public utilities.
The real style.
People love it when their cars have been decorated with an iPhone.
And that's why the membership shirts are in black, so you can break into
that's right, this stuff. For late night street crew promo.
We're not endorsing that. No.
I am. Do it.
This can't get back to me. So, yeah, I mean, we need all the promotion we can get, especially after this episode. We got a lot of goodwill to recoup after this.
Thank you.
I guess that's it for this week's show.
Thank you for listening. I'm Mike.
I am P Money.
I'm Jimski.
And I'm Sonia. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Shigori!
Sonia Euro.
Jimski, do it. Say it.
Yeah.
Shigori.
Not shigori. It's not shigori. An adjective.
It's not. You're shigori. Not my mother.
I'll say it however I like.
Then you're avenging someone.
The streets will run with your blood, Paul Montgomery.
It's the Meiji Restoration, and you have to avenge your brother's death. Say it. Say your name. Holy crap.
I think my nose is bleeding. Yes.
I have finished my champagne. Oh my god, that was so odd.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that because you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it. You know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, If anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.